Today, aid agencies are warning of a second wave of deaths in Myanmar, putting the number of people at risk at 2.5 million. Among others, the UN is warning the country's ruling military junta it could be responsible for those deaths if officials continue to refuse allowing international aid agencies to assist. So where do we go from here? Jerry Woodrum is director of the U.S. campaign for Burma. And Jeremy, the news today is really not encouraging. We spoke to someone from the UN earlier who said they had 15 local workers on the ground in the southern part of the country that's been hit so hard. 15 people trying to help 2.5 million or more?
Yeah, it's a complete disaster and a total debacle. You have 2.5 million people facing death from disease as a result of the cyclone, and what started as a natural disaster has turned into a man-made crisis.
And so where do you go from here? We've heard for days. We, of course, are talking now on day 13. It's been 13 days since Cyclone Nargis hit the country. And all we hear is about how the junta is not allowing not only aid in, but also refusing to allow international aid workers in, and that there have been negotiations going on. What did those negotiations look like? What have you heard about them?
Well, there were some negotiations at trying to let the regime sort of handpick who the aid workers would be. So the thought was that maybe if we sent in only aid workers of one race, then maybe that would be acceptable to the regime. So the latest I read this morning was that there may be approval for Asians only to enter into Burma to help the people in the cyclone region. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that appears what the UN may be signing off on.
I've seen reports from the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development saying yesterday that the crisis is so severe that they are willing to risk American aid winding up in the wrong hands or for sale to ensure that at least some of it gets through.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the right tack to take. I mean, that is exactly the problem, is that people are willing to hand over the aid to the military regime, and then it doesn't reach the people that need to have it. I mean, you're talking about a situation where 2.5 million people, there needs to be multiple flights landing every hour, a massive relief effort with hundreds, if not thousands, of aid workers, and hoping that a little bit might trickle through is not enough. What we would like to see is for countries to immediately dispatch the aid that is sitting on ships and helicopters and the cargo planes into the Delta region inside Burma over the objections of the military regime.
Well, you just brought me to my next question, is exactly how do you do that over the objections of the military rulers? And there's been reports, for example, that the police are blocking the roads that would lead to the ravaged Delta. And so, therefore, you got UN workers there who are just there to deliver food. I mean, what are they supposed to do? They're not soldiers.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, this is the world what wrung its hands and expressed its collective guilt and frustration after 800,000 people were killed by, you know, in a war and genocide in Rwanda in 1994. And that was supposed to be a seminal moment in our history in which the world came together and through the UN afterwards pledged that when millions face death in the future, there would be humanitarian intervention.
Well, Jeremy, you use the Rwanda situation, but let's focus on this particular regime. And we spoke with someone from the World Food Program this morning who's talking with lower-level officials. Mm-hmm. They're standing at checkpoints. Mm-hmm. They appear to have no clout. He candidly admitted that Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General, is being ignored by the Myanmar regime. I mean, does this regime have any sort of military power? Is there a scenario where you could bypass them?
Yeah, exactly. There is, because the Delta region that's been hardest hit is not an area that's heavily populated by troops of the military regime. The U.S., the French, and the British navies all have ships, helicopters, and supplies sitting right offshore. They're just sitting there while people are dying. And what we're saying is they should go into this rural Delta region, not into the capital and not into the largest city, and stop airdropping supplies and finding other alternatives to get relief directly to the people. The military is not going to let these unarmed UN and other aid workers do their job.
Jeremy, often airdrops are very unreliable as a way of reaching people. In the Delta region, is there something other than simply dropping food by air that would get to more people?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really need to get people on the ground delivering the aid, which means the militaries of these countries. I mean, there's 11,000 troops just sitting there waiting. They need to go into this region and start delivering supplies. I mean, this is a type of scenario they could deliver supplies in the morning and leave at night. I mean, they don't need to stay there. They don't need to occupy in any way at all. Airdrops are really not a good scenario, but it is the last possible scenario, and we're getting to that point where we need to start looking
Jeremy, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running out of time. Just really quickly, and who should be the international body to lead that effort? Is it the UN? Is it the U.S.? Is it it's someone else? And you have about 10 seconds.
There's zero chance that the UN will do it because China has already said they will veto any initiative by the UN to do this. So it'll have to be countries such as India, Thailand, the U.S., France, that are willing to do so, that already have assets right there offshore.
Jeremy Woodrum, director of the U.S. Campaign for Burma, thanks so much.
And ASEAN, the regional security agency involving some of those countries that were mentioned by Jeremy, has taken some action this morning, but it's very, very, very limited.
It's so complicated and so desperate. We'll be back.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.